You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
My colleague Bongani Bingwa brought to my attention a really compelling editorial that I read out bits and pieces of to my producers in the Business Day. And it's wonderful. It really is. And kudos to the Business Day for this editorial, particularly on a day when we have budget. Mava, you would have thought the obvious editorial, if you were part of an editorial team of a financial daily, is to opine on what Tito should or shouldn't do. But actually, they went with a very different social commentary on an advert that you would have heard here on Cape Talk and 702. Someone complained about the advert, and their complaint was dismissed by the regulatory body that looks after standards in advertising. And the Business Day editorial argues that, in fact, the Advertising Regulatory Board, the majority of members of the regulatory board, got it wrong. So I want to play this ad. I want to read bits and pieces from the Business Day editorial. And if you are interested, we can debate that. Otherwise, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about on the open line. But listen very carefully to this ad, because I want to open up a series of critical questions about it.
Welcome to Harold's Netforest Hotline. Talk to me, Jane.
I'm looking for something for our anniversary.
Tell me more about hubby first.
Well, he's half English and half Zulu.
Zulu, which half?
Oh, Harold, below the belt.
Lucky girl, Jane. Why not spoil him with a moon and back choc crate? Personalized with his name and a variety of delicious chockies. Because something tells me he's got a thing for Top Deck. So there you have it. There's no reason for you to be a plain Jane. Visit netflorist.co.za. Smooches.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
13 minutes after now. Let me read for you from this Business Day editorial that is based on that ad. Someone complained about that ad, and their complaint was dismissed. And this is what the Business Day has to say about the dismissal of the complaint. The ad played on the age-old racist trope that black men are brutish, rampant sexual beings, which in different manifestations suggests they are, at best, overly well-endowed dynamos between the sheets, and at worst are unable to control their sexual urges, are sexually violent, and rapists. In response to a listener complaining that the ad fetishized black male genitalia, the regulatory board ruled that the use of a humorous essay stereotype did not amount to an unacceptable fetishizing, and that as such the ad was acceptable. And then there's a couple of paragraphs where the Business Day editorial gives a very nice history going back at least to the 12th century of the ways in which black men have had our sexualities and our bodies, really, and our entire beings often conflated with those of monkeys, apes, and demons. And it's after giving that history and a truncated version of it, it concludes by saying that we rightly police discrimination on the grounds of sex and gender when it comes to objectifying women, and we need to do better on that regard. But the same needs to apply to men. So let me quote the last couple of paragraphs from the editorial. Unsurprisingly, there are many programs and events that seek to highlight discrimination and or objectification of women. But the SA Constitution sets us a higher standard. The Bill of Rights holds all equal, outlaws discrimination on any grounds, and protects the right to dignity for all. We are not free to say these protections belong only to this or that section of the population. One of advertising's golden rules is to be relevant. How relevant is it to rehash an age-old trope known for being offensive and nonsensical, all to sell a bunch of flowers or a box of chocolates? Over and above everything else that is massively problematic with this kind of marketing, it shows a lack of skill among industry professionals who suggested and approved this tired notion. It also illustrates a lack of cognizance of SA's fragile yet brutal psyche. Yet, just as we insist on the rights of women and protest their objectification, as I did orally when she walked past, so should we resist tossing aside the racist sexual objectification of black men as a humorous South African stereotype. So over to you. I think that this is a compelling analysis from the Business Day. I think they're right. I don't know if I'd want to ban the ad, because I hate banning stuff. The liberal in me has got a knee-jerk anti-banning impulse. But remember, we can distinguish between two questions. Should it be banned, and is it acceptable? Not everything that is unacceptable should be banned. I don't think the ad should be banned, but I really think the ad is a piss-poor example of creativity. I'm sorry. It is, in the first instance, before we even talk ethics or law, it is lazy. It is creatively lazy. You should do better. And I really hope that whichever agency got the money to come up with that particular ad, that, you know, they feel ashamed of the lack of creativity. So in the first instance, it's lazy. And secondly, I do think that it perpetuates a certain stereotype about black sexuality that is unacceptable. So the language of banning is maybe the easy conversation to have. We should all agree that we should not hasten to ban advertising just because some ads is really not our humor, because humor will differ from person to person. It's going to be very subjective. But I struggle to see what is acceptable about that kind of stereotype being perpetuated. And I think that the Business Day and the editorial today, which I suggest you go and check out, gives us a compelling argument for why that kind of advertising is, in the best case scenario.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
21 minutes after 9 o'clock. Anything goes on the open line. You can start any conversation, politics, a social issue, sport, whatever you want to talk about. It need not only be about whether or not there should be limits to the use of humor in advertising, but that's one conversation that has been opened up. Jeremy, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment on the ad. It's such a weak ad. When I heard it a few weeks ago, I wondered to myself, if the agency was not, you know, they're now invoking another stereotype by utilizing the voice of a so-called effeminate gay guy in order to sort of give their advert legitimacy. Because if it was a person who didn't have such an effeminate voice, perhaps it wouldn't have been so accepted. So they utilize one stereotype to piggyback on the other one. And that's my thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, I think that's right. Then my very good friend Bandile says, boo, the ad is fine, UB. The NetFlora's ad is fine, but mostly because the advertiser has a track record of poking fun at similar stereotypes, and so it is not reasonable to attribute malice to them. Bandile, you can do better than that, boo. Malice is not a necessary condition for a speech act to be unacceptable or to be subject to reasonable criticism. All that you're really saying is the good old, but what were their intentions, Eusebius? I don't care. Let's imagine that best whites, best straights, best whatever, the most progressive people that you can think of, Mother Teresa's, came up with the ad. The intention doesn't settle the question. So whether there's malicious intent is not the only way or even a necessary part of the analysis. The question is whether the final product is acceptable or not acceptable. And you may still think it's acceptable. I'm just making a small point in response to your claim about malice. I don't see why determining malice should be how one settles the issue. Kevin, good morning.
Yes, I just say I think people are looking very extremely too deep into it. It's meant to be humorous, because if that's the case, it's not just black men. It's, you know, if you ever go to Greece and see the ancient Greek pottery, it's men with exaggerated genitalia. If you ever go to India, the carvings onto the building that influenced the Kama Sutra, it's the same thing. Go to Japan, go to Scandinavia. It's a global thing. It's not just confined to black men. Go to Native, you know, if you visit any Native American village, it's the same thing. It's all over the world. And I just think that this is a long tradition. It's not just confined to black men. It's global.
Look, I'm open to persuasion on this one. I don't have a strong view. In fact, I wasn't bothered much by the ad beyond a minute or three. I don't like the ad. I think it's a lazy ad. But there's a difference between lazy and thinking that something is unethical or impermissible. And in my head, hold on, Kevin, hold on. And so in my head, that's the distinction that I've always made whenever I've heard that ad as a listener to this radio station. But the Business Day editorial, I think, is really, really cogently written and worth taking seriously, even if one disagrees with it upon engaging with it. So to your point, which is similar to my mate Bandile on Twitter's point, You seem to suggest that because there's a history of tapping into stereotypes across time and place, maybe we shouldn't take ourselves too seriously. And perhaps that's true. I mean, my God, what would life be if we were to hugely constrain what the content of acceptable humor is? I take that point. But just on a very narrow, on a narrow sort of response to that, I mean, the fact that you might find stereotyping in India, in France, in wherever, I'm not sure why that bolsters the argument for the acceptability of the ad, because something can be part of a huge tradition and a canon that is well established, but a canon can be wholly unacceptable.
Okay, I can see your point there. But I just think people are just looking too deep into it, really. It's a long tradition across civilizations. Wherever you go, it just happened to be a South African, it just happens to have a South African twist to it.
Mm. Okay, interesting take. Thanks, Kevin. Have a wonderful day. Krish, good morning.
How's it, Jimmy? You serious?
I'm good, thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Listen, it's just, this ad is just very irritating. Not to over-intellectualize it, not to, it's just annoying, you know. Every time you hear it for the last couple of years, it's very, very irritating. And you switch the radio off. It's got nothing to do with anything. It's just grating on the nerves.
Now, I agree with you. It is also that. I think it's lazy and uncreative. And sometimes the success criteria in marketing is something memorable. And if Krish is grated, there will be some marketing person out there going, yes, we have created what they will call talkability on the Eusebius McKayser show. They seem to think that any news is good news when it comes to a brand. I'm not sure whether that's true necessarily. Thanks, Krish. Thanks for your viewpoint. I think we've got a voice note as well. Let's have a listen to what one of you are saying on the voice notes. And remember, you can send us a voice note if you are so inclined using our WhatsApp number on 072-702-1702.
Morning, Eusebius. Just talking about this ad. I've had a problem with this ad for all the time that it's been shown, and I don't think that it can be banned, but I didn't think that it was appropriate for it to be played on Cape Talk, particularly with your progressive views on social justice and discrimination. And so I was surprised that it was shown, and I've struggled on two occasions to get through to the producers to ask them about that and to discuss it. That's my view, Eusebius. Michael from Franschhoek.
I think that's a really interesting view from Michael. Yeah. But you know, and I'm grappling with this in real time as I'm listening to your thoughtful intervention there on that voice note, Michael. If you associate a certain kind of politics with Eusebius or Zania or Ikarima, I wonder whether you want, however, to have advertising that perfectly dovetails either their identities or their known or professed politics that they might have. Progressive politics, as you put it in this particular case. I'm not sure. I'm not so sure. I mean, I think we need to allow for diversity of speech acts, including creative output in advertising. So that's the pull for me that says, keep this thing and don't overthink it. And then there's a part of me that thinks, well, are we surprised when those stereotypes further down the line in a different context sometimes become the basis for more overtly unacceptable ways in which we treat each other when we are peddling those stereotypes all the time, and we even want to fight for our right to do exactly that? And I'm not sure. I think there's some complexity here. 29 minutes after 9.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
A couple of your tweets coming through on this issue. Subu says, Eusebius, most of those Netflix ads using the character of Harold are based on cheap humor that perpetuates stereotypes. If it's not fetishizing black male genitalia today, then it is feminine homosexual stereotypes tomorrow. You're right. And sometimes both of those in one ad, which is exactly what happens there. Essay ads are renowned for being creative, in my opinion, says Subu. This one is just simply unimaginative. Yeah, I think above all else, even if we agree that it is permissible, even ethically permissible, I wonder if anyone thinks that that ad hits the mark from a creativity point of view. See, we've got a response here. Marvin Clamaguini on Twitter from the Advertising Regulatory Board. This is an open line, right? So you don't have an inherent right of reply. But if they'd like to come and explain themselves, it may be good to open up yourself to the public and articulate your logic when you decide these matters. Because I would actually love to know what goes on in their heads when they get this kind of complaint. What are these mysterious advertising standards? Who decides them? And how do you apply them to a particular ad when responses to advertising, like responses to film and music, are necessarily subjective? So we'll see whether we can get someone who's behind this Advertising Regulatory Board account on Twitter to come on and take us into their confidence.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
17 minutes before 10 o'clock, Gail Schimmel joins me now. Gail, of course, is the CEO of the Advertising Regulatory Body. Gail, good morning. Thank you so much for coming onto our open line.
Absolute pleasure.
I don't know if you saw the Business Day editorial today. I thought it was quite compelling. It criticizes the decision to allow this particular ad, and it says all the things that wouldn't be news to you or to me in terms of the history of black male sexuality being pathologized for a very long time, going back at least to the 13th century. And it ends by saying that the ad is, in the best case scenario, ethically and legally acceptable, but incredibly lazy, creatively speaking. And in the worst case scenario, that the majority of the regulatory body got it wrong, because peddling this type of stereotype is as unacceptable when it is in reference to male sexuality as it might be in relation to this kind of odious, more obvious daily bread and butter in South Africa, which is normally to stereotype women.
There's so many things there to unpack, and I've actually been listening to the show and I've been thinking that you've been doing such a good job of explaining where the decision comes from, which is why I didn't phone in earlier.
I've got a liberal impulse to not ban things, but I think the banning language, and I know that you'll agree with me, is the uninteresting part of it. What I want to know that I can't answer, that only you can answer, is who decides advertising standards? What are these standards? And how do you assess complaints when someone were to complain to you?
Okay. So the first thing, where do the standards come from? The standards come from the industry. There is a document called the Code of Advertising Standards, which is based on international norms, but has grown over the last 50 years as the industry changes it and amends it. And it's a document, it's not like a law that takes years and years to change. It's a very easy to change document because advertising is fluid, the standards of society are fluid, and we need to be able to change as our understanding of society changes and the understanding of our consumers changes. So that is where the code comes from. Offensiveness is always going to be a challenge. You know, what I find offensive, you won't find offensive. What you find offensive, I won't find offensive. And it's very difficult to draw the line. And I've been thinking as I've been looking at the media feedback on this decision and then comparing it to our recent controversial Chicken Licken decision, that it really is a position of damned if you do, damned if you don't. So it's always a difficult one. And we are currently looking at how can we make it more objective, less subjective, but there is always going to be an element of subjectivity.
And I feel for you because that difficulty, the damned if you do, damned if you don't, is compounded by, depending on your philosophical view on aesthetics, and my view is I'm an objectivist when it comes to morality. Racism is wrong, sexism is wrong, but we can debate whether Bon Jovi, my favorite example, I used to have digs mates at university who hated Bon Jovi. I think Bon Jovi is awesome. When it comes to advertising, it's a bit like film and music. It is inherently subjective, so you will be looking for the elusive if you are in search of an objective code.
Well, I think one of the things to say is that we're not the taste police. So the first thing is we never are making a decision about whether an ad is in bad taste or not. And in this particular case, we are not making a decision about whether the character of Harold in particular is in bad taste or not. I have my opinion about that. I'm sure you have yours. But that is not the decision before us. What was before us here was the question of, does it fetishize black male genitalia? And that was a difficult one because the complainant hadn't gone into detail about why he found that offensive. And you'll see if you read the decision that we say we're unclear are you harking back to that history of how black men and their sexuality has been treated in the past? Or are you uncomfortable with the implication that black men have superior genitalia to white men? And we weren't clear from the complaint exactly where the complaint was coming from. So I think one of the things here is the lesson to the consumer is you need to explain your complaint properly.
But can I ask you a process question here, Gail? Because sometimes, and you know this, I mean, as a creative, sometimes the levels of artistic literacy will not be as high in a member of the public, as in Gail Schimmel, as in Pumla Gola, as in Eusebius. So do you only, like a court of law, assess the argument as it appears in an email in front of you, or do you also decide for yourselves whether or not there's a case here to be articulated beyond the clumsy wording of the person that didn't fully explain it? Because if we had to lift a couple of paragraphs out of Rape a South African Nightmare, you know that we will quickly agree that the case against stereotyping black male genitalia from a Professor Gola will be far more compelling than someone who has a hunch that the ad is problematic but can't articulate it.
Yeah, and again, a very difficult path to walk, because on one side, we are legally obliged to consider the complaint before us. So we can't. So what will often happen is we'll get a complaint, we can see something else wrong with the ad.
Yes.
But that's not the complaint before us, and we are only allowed to consider the complaint before us. We're not allowed to put words into the complainant's mouth. So on one hand, we're bound by what's before us. On the other hand, if it is really unclear to us, we do go back. So if we get a complaint saying, I don't like that ad, we'll go back and say, please explain to us why you don't like that ad and try and give us as many details. This one fell into a funny middle ground because he was very clear on why he didn't like the ad. He didn't like the ad because it fetishized male genitalia. But when we came to unpacking it and making a decision, we found that while it had been clear enough to take the complaint forward, when it came to making a decision, we were a little bit unclear on exactly what his reasoning was. But by that point, we finished the process, because remember, we've got to send the complaint to the advertiser to make a comment. Mm. The advertiser then gets to make their case. We can't keep going back and forth, because the nature of advertising is that if we take 4 months to make a decision, it becomes Pyrrhic.
It's a Pyrrhic loss or Pyrrhic victory. Yeah. Out of interest, what did the advertiser say by way of articulating their own defense?
It is summarized in the decision, and they refer to the things we've referred to in the commercial. They refer to the humor, and they refer to the fact that they have this well-established brand platform in the character of Harold, and that people take Harold for what he is, a little bit of what you've been discussing here. How much do we take into account that people take Harold for what he is? And there is a history. And this topic of stereotyping is such a difficult one, because on one hand, you know, if we look at the gender stereotypes, which you've alluded to, on one hand, gender stereotyping is part of how we all live our lives. Well, advertising makes sense if we insist that the men have to start doing the washing up in the advertising for dishwashing liquid. Will the advert make sense to the public? On the other hand, stereotyping is a very dangerous thing. Where do we draw the line? Where do we start impinging on free speech in trying to fix the stereotypical problems we have in advertising? It's a big debate. I think you'll have to have me on a full show for that one.
No, we will, but I'm loving this conversation, so I'm going to milk it for just one more minute, because this is a beautiful way of unpacking it. No pun on unpacking stuff. You know what's interesting about stereotyping, while we're on it, and this is my final comment, and then you can give a final response, is that I keep saying, with my tongue only half in my cheek, that thank God the one thing that wasn't captured by the Guptas and their friends is our sense of humor. Because humor is an important refuge for South Africans. It's a kind of respite from the dreariness of everything that goes on in society. And one plank of the South African humor is the way in which we sometimes lampoon ourselves and each other. So we don't want to lose that, because that is an important part of what makes us South African. And yet at the same time, when we put on our more earnest hats, a lot that is wrong in our relations with one another also gets reinforced very often in the same stereotypes that can be so wonderfully escapist. So it's there's a duality there that's very uncomfortable.
That is exactly it. That's exactly the problem we face as the rule makers and as the rule enforcers. We're, you know, exactly that humor, we don't want to say to advertisers, don't joke about stereotypes, because then we're going to lose such richness. And it is so much part of the South African psyche that we do joke about our stereotypes. And that is often our bridge to each other, is joking about our stereotypes.
That's right.
And we don't want to lose the bridges that we have. But at the same time, and this is what's been the topic of a number of decisions we've made, including the chicken licken one, there are some things that are not really acceptable to joke about. But where does one draw that line?
Absolutely.
How does one know what one can joke about and what one can't? We've said in Chicken Licken that colonialism is something that we don't think, as a directorate of the ARB, that you can joke about. But it is. We've been highly criticised for that decision. You know, where does one draw the line? Where do we stop? Where do we say go? And it's never. It's also not something that there's ever going to be a clear solution.
Absolutely.
No one's going to be able to say, here it is, here are the rules, and now you know.
Gail, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Absolute pleasure.
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
Hi, CVS. I think I'm a black man and I don't see anything wrong with the advert. I find it, you know, I giggle a bit when I listen to it. You know, there's far more important things going on in this country than to be worrying about a Ned Florist advert, and it's really not that bad. That's my opinion. But I think we just need to chill a bit.
I've got no problem with us chillaxing. We can certainly do with chillaxing a little bit, more than a little bit. And my God, do we need to do that? But again, part of the problem here that we need to recognize is who speaks on behalf of a group that is targeted by an advert? That's the other difficulty here from a methodology point of view. Some people will say, oh yeah, no, play a song. Arthur's song that talks about Kaffirs does nothing to me. That word is a word that I won't give any power, Eusebius. But the person next to me will say, no, that word is triggering. So the other difficulty here is who in a group that is subject to the stereotyping gets to decide what is representative? Or do we do a headcount and say, how do the majority feel, for example? That too, to me, doesn't seem like a very hygienic way of settling a complex discussion either. I don't know. How do you see it?
702 and Cape Talk.
Open line.
Max, good morning.
You see, yes, I think the intellectual going around that you're going through makes it very difficult, as you say, to legislate any form of hate speech, because who decides what hate is? And I think that, you know, the controversial figure in the Canada and the States, Jordan Peterson, speaks about this quite intensely, and I agree and disagree with him on many other of his issues, but I think he gets it right in this, is that I almost feel that we need to listen to hate speech as a society. And if it's something that's really out of whack where public opinion is, like the K word, I think public opinion and public scrutiny does enough to deal with that individual, that person. But I think when you get into very dangerous areas of social engineering when you start legislating that. And for me personally, when there's hate out there, whether it's that crazy character and dealer or a whole bunch of other groups or individuals, I think society needs to listen to that, because if we repress and don't listen to that, I've got a feeling that it bubbles out and gets worse.
I think hate speech should be outlawed, and it is illegal in South Africa, but I agree with your embedded point, which I think is, for me personally, the more interesting point in this discussion this hour, which is to say that we can allow the marketplace of ideas to debate these issues without legislating against certain speech acts, including advertising, being flighted on radio or television. Because in a sense, we are short-circuiting debate by saying, should it be banned or not? I think the more complicated and more interesting and also more salient question is it acceptable? And acceptability isn't a legal notion only.
Absolutely. And maybe also hate speech. We can narrowly define it as any sort of acts of violence against someone, but it must be also narrow enough to not say that if we say something that hurts someone's feelings because of the past, that we can't start broadening that because that's when we start getting into dangerous territory.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. My point is simply that the fear of a slippery slope of banning should also not preclude us from having a sophisticated conversation about whether particular stereotypes are socially acceptable, even if we agree that they should be permitted in law. In 20 seconds, Paul, you can have the final say. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I've been actually been trying to phone you for months about these adverts and how they put different people in different roles. And like the stereotyping of the fact that the guy is gay and he arranges flowers, whatever the case may be. And, you know, I don't know why it irks me. I'm not a gay guy. I don't know why it irks me, but they couldn't use Eusebius on that advert because you don't sound gay. So they've got to use a guy sounding like a queen, if you know what I mean. And it's in my face, and I don't know why it's in my face. It's the same as the jewelry advert at Cavendish Square with the rich white colonial woman speaking. Are any black people going to buy jewelry from that shop? I don't know. It's just that these adverts come up, and then they've got the concerts adverts where it has to be an American accent inviting people over. Can't we just use our own people and not stereotype?
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul. Thanks so much for that wonderful discussion on the open line.